Garpi, Garpi, Garpi.
Better?
We good?
Yeah. Stick that in your pocket.
Okay. You're good to go. Hi, everybody. Hi. Aloha.
Aloha.
I'm Tom, and I'm an addict. And Kathy, thank you. She went to the bathroom. Okay, so she got me crying. You know, when Tim called me up, he said that they were putting this thing together, and a few people who had dropped my name and said, if you're going to do something on the International Fellowship, give Tom a call. So, this is something I love doing. I'd much rather talk about us and what we've done than talk about me. So, and I've got 41 years of it. So, just a little briefly, I'll tell you a little bit about me. I'm not going to go much into it. When I was 20 years old, I was state of California declared me a threat to the state of California and to myself, put me in a maximum security mental institution for the criminally insane, this place called the Atascadero. For an indefinite period of time, which meant could be for the rest of my life. I used to act out a little bit in some of the worst places, in courts. Like I picked up a bench and threw it at a judge once, jumped on the ground, smashed my head into the concrete. So they didn't think I was too stable. But anyways, I remember, in that hospital, it's funny because I was talking to Norm, because he used to bring up, an H&I panel with AA into that hospital, and I remember these guys in the hospital coming up to me and saying, "Hey, would you like to go to an AA meeting?" And I said, "Well, will it get me out of here?" And they say, "Well, not really." I go, "Then I ain't gonna go," but I remember these guys that asked me. There was something different about them. You got a place with all these nutcases, right? And there was these guys that had something mellow about them, But anyways, I get out of the hospital, I hit the streets, I'm strung out again. In California, once they hang that crazy jacket on you, you end up going back to the nut house, when they pick you up again. And I always get picked up. There's no doubt about it. I was strung out living in Venice, California, and a friend of mine came over to my house, a guy that I've known since I was 11 years old, and he came over my house looking for some dope, he had just come back from Hawaii. His parents used to send him to Hawaii, to get him away from people like me. So he comes over to my house and we're talking, and the next day I was driving down the freeway in this truck. I had a job working for a plastic factory. They used to pour plastic pellets and hoppers, and they make out these little plastic products. And you got to understand, I was a hippie, in the 60s, the plastic people and the plastic society, and now they got me working for the fucking plastic factory, and it's like, so I really was hitting my bottom, but I was driving down the freeway, and I'm stuck there, and all of a sudden this feeling came over me, man, there's got to be something better than this. I was strung out, I've been smoking joints in the truck all morning long, I'm depressed, I'm caught in a traffic jam, and just that feeling, it's just a matter of time just a matter of time, and you're just going to be so strung out, they're going to pick you up, you're going to act out, and you're going to go away. And this thought came in my head, Hawaii. I said, man, that's it, I'm going to go to Hawaii. So it's my first fellowship development trip, by the way. So I went over to my friend's house that night, and I said, I'm going to go to Hawaii, man. Tell me about Hawaii. And he showed me pictures of Hawaii, and you know, but he had laughed at me. He said, man, you ain't going to Hawaii, man. You can't even get out of Venice. He says, you know, there ain't no way you're going to get to Hawaii. He said, no, I'm going to go. I'm going to go. So in one of the pictures, there was this older woman. He says, you know, if you get a chance, you should look this lady up. She lives out in the North Shore, Sunset Beach, where all the hippies are. You'll fit in good out there. And he says, but this lady's really cool. All the hippies like her. You know, she's an alcoholic. Well, I thought there was this old lush that lived out there, probably screwing all the hippies, you know. And, you know, they always had a hippie mommy, you know, around, you know. So, feel well, you know, things get really bad, I can look this, you know, this old lush up. And, so I got on a week later, I got on the plane at $70. You know, I had $40 in my pocket. I bought my ticket for $70. It was a one-way ticket. And I show up 11 o'clock at night in Honolulu, thinking that maybe I can buy a little bicycle from the little village of Honolulu, you know, and pedal my way out to the North Shore, you know. You know, but 11 o'clock at night, realizing no bicycle shops open at night. You know, Honolulu's big, and I don't even know what the hell the North Shore is, you know. And somehow I made it out there that night and slept on the beach and woke up in the morning. I got my first look at Hawaii in the daylight, and it was beautiful. And then suddenly the reality hit me. What in the hell am I doing in Hawaii? You know, I ain't got no money. I don't know nobody. You know, great brainstorm. This is the story of my life, you know. And so I'm sitting there, on the beach, man. You know, there ain't nobody on the beach. The beach is totally empty. And all of a sudden, this little car pulls up. And I look down, and I see this woman get out of the car, and she walks past me. And she doesn't see me, and she's looking out at the ocean. And I recognized her. I said, this is that lady in the picture. And I walked down to her, and I said, is your name Flobert? And she says, yeah, that's me, sweetheart. And I started mumbling about my friend, because I couldn't talk very good. And she says, well, look, why don't you put the things in my car and come on back to the house? Well, it turns out she was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and probably the only person in the islands that was working with addicts. She opened up her doors and, you know, and had a little, you know, had a meeting in her house. And this is out in the North Shore. This is way out in the country in 1968. You know, it takes 2.5 hours to drive into Honolulu. So you got to realize my first meetings I ever went to were home meetings. I thought all meetings were home meetings, you know. And then when I read that AA book, they talked about the meetings people meet in their homes, you know. Then I later heard, you know, they had these big meetings, you know, in churches and things, you know. But that's how I got clean. And her group, she had a little group, and it was called the Beachcomber Spiritual Progress Traveling Group. And I had no idea what that really meant in my life to come, because I haven't stopped traveling. But they handed me a little white booklet, told me that there was a program called Narcotics Anonymous. They said it was very small. 1968, there was 20 meetings in the world that they knew of. You know, as Gene remember tell you, you know, we were so small, we didn't even know we were small. You know, today what, we got, you know, 58,000 groups, 130 countries. You know. And we're so big, we don't even know we're big. You know, some of us still can't see beyond the tip of our noses. You know, our own little regions, our own little areas, you know. But some of the stuff I can share right out of the heart, you know, and some of the stuff I'm going to have to look at, because I don't want to miss a country, I don't want to miss a community, you know. So I'm going to have to go thumb through this stuff. And I'm not used to doing this, but, you know, I don't do PowerPoints, because it just distracts the hell out of me, and I just get lost in what I'm saying. So I'm not one of those kind of people that can do presentations. You know, I'm better just speaking from my heart. But there's so much stuff here that I want to share with you guys, because you're gonna love this stuff. You're gonna love what's going on with our fellowship. I was so blown away when they told me that you were gonna speak before me. But you know what? I'm gonna share with you Jimmy's dream. I'm gonna tell you what happened. it came true. I mean, and you know what? You know, I remember arriving in Cartagena, Colombia. Bob Barrett and I were on the same plane, and we pulled up. We get off the plane, and there was Air Force One was sitting there in the runway too. This Clinton was in town at the same time, you know. And we thought, oh, that's nice. You know, the president's here for us, you know. And, but as you know, as Bob and I were stepping off the plane, we're watching all these people, you know. And I said to Bob, Bob, did you ever even imagine that someday we would have a world convention in like Colombia? And Bob says, or that we'd be where we are all over the world. And he goes, no, Tom, just none of us did. Just, you know, none of us could see beyond the chip of our noses. Just accepting Jimmy. Jimmy always said this. He always said this, that one day NA would be in every corner of the world. And before I get going, though, I want to do one thing. I understand those two home groups put this thing together. Will you guys stand up and let us see who you are? You know, and I'm sure there's a lot more of you, but but you know what? This is fantastic. I mean, you guys are the bomb, man. You know, just how did this thing start? With one little home group, right? Okay. So, 1983-84 was World Service Conference. It was my first World Service Conference. You know, Hawaii, you know, I don't know how big we were there, maybe 30 groups at the time. And I had a big falling out with WSO back in the early 70s. And I don't know if you even know the story, Kathy, but we had meetings in 1970 at the Kaneohe Marine Corps Air Station, you know, where all the Marines were coming back from Vietnam, and they were given amnesty if they turned themselves in, said they had a drug program. Well, you know, there was this little handful of addicts, you know, that were there in Hawaii, so they got a hold of us through AA, and we started a meeting at, you know, on the base. Well, there were 60 or 70 guys that show up at this meeting, and all we had was a couple of, you know, the white book and you know, some pamphlets. So I called your dad and, you know, told him we need some more IPs and some more pamphlets. So, you know, they told us how much money to send. I think we sent $30 or $40. And then it didn't come. And I kept waiting, it didn't come. So I called up, and it wasn't your dad that answered the phone, it was somebody. And I said, you know, well, where's our liturgy? He said, well, we sent it. I said, well, we didn't get it. He said, well, we sent it. Well, I said, well, we still didn't get it. He said, what do you think, we rip you off? I said, well, you cash on a fucking check, you know, and, you know, so we had an exchange of fuck yous, you know, and then, you know, I went back, you know, to this Marine Corps station. I said, we can't get any more of this literature, man. And the guy said, well, we can take care of that. So they ran 3,000 copies off, you know, the Marine Corps here, you know, press, you know, so we said, the hell with that shit, you know, And we were hearing all the rumors, you know, because we were very isolated in Hawaii, you know, and we were hearing all the rumors of all the fighting that was going on, and, you know, and then the East Coast and the West Coast, and, you know, and we're thinking to ourselves, you know, shit, we're doing pretty good over here, you know, we'll stay out of that shit. You know, we're doing really good here, you know, the South is growing, and so all the way up until, like, you know, the 80s, you know, we had very little contact, you know, with California, and what really drew us back into the, you know, sort of the larger NA community was actually Bo, of all people. We got a call from Bo saying that they're writing a book, and would Hawaii like to give some input into this thing? And we said, where are you from? He says, Georgia. I said, yeah, I think we'd be interested. If you would have said California, we would have said no, you know? And so, tell you guys to understand. I mean, a lot of you guys look at all the old timers, the predecessors, you know, and you know, the pioneers, and you say, oh, we're so grateful to you guys, you know, for your perseverance and stuff. You know, you got to understand, 1953, 1982, it took for us to get a book. You know, 1968, 20 meetings in the world. We weren't doing something right. You know, I remember standing at as a convention, they're doing the countdown. There was like three of us. I had, you know, most time. The other guy had a couple of years less than me. And then they went like 18 years of nobody standing up. And the guy doing the countdown all of a sudden turned around and looked at me and the other two guys and said, "Boy, you guys weren't doing your job, were you?" You know, he's being facetious, you know, but, you know, I mean, but you know, and I share about this when I'm traveling, you know, and I go to some of these third world countries where they fight like crazy with each other, and they fight. They make us look like, you know, the Boy Scouts compared to the way they fight in India and Pakistan. You know, I mean, it's amazing. But I tell these guys, you know, like, you know, I say, you know, in the beginning, you know, we were like a big bucket of crabs crawling all over each other, fighting and, you know, pinching, and every time a crab will start trying to crawl up out of the bucket, some crab will pull him back down, says, "No one gets out of this bucket," you know. You know, and it wasn't for years later that, you know, we all started saying to ourselves, "Man, you know, someone's got to get out of this bucket, man." It was proof to us it works, you know, there is something beyond, you know, the crab bucket, you know. And we started helping each other to get out of the bucket. And as we started doing that, of course, the fellowship started growing. But, you know, you can understand, you know, most of us, you know, most of the people you heard share this weekend, you know, most people came in the rooms and they only had like 4 or 5 years clean. You know, I mean, we all got clean on the traditions. We didn't get clean on the steps. You know the writing the steps, how we write the steps? That's pure NA, you know. I mean, the other fellowship didn't do that. And the reason we did that is because, you know, we didn't have sponsors in our communities that had any experience, strength, and hope. So people got long-distance sponsors. And the only way you could do that, because, you know, we didn't have internet or any of that kind of stuff, is sponsor would say, "Well, I don't know how we're going to do this long-distance. I guess start on the first step. Read it. Write it out. And it sort of became part of our NA vernacular. You know, this is, you know, sort of something just unique to us. But very few people really had a lot of recovery experience, you know, in the steps, you know, in their own personal growth. The fellowship was growing, and everybody jumped right into service, right into, you've heard the expression, you know, service-based recovery versus recovery-based service. Well, a lot of us had this service-based recovery thing going on, and when we all got out of service, the shit hit the fan, man, because our lives fell apart. You know, fortunately, and I believe because our hearts were in the right place, you know, when the student's ready, the teacher appears, and we got the help we needed, you know, and we started really doing the recovery that we needed to improve our own selves. But you can just imagine, because without a whole lot of recovery, you got a whole group of addicts together, we're going to fight like crazy with each other, our ego's going to be all over the place. And that's what we did. And it hurt. You know, it hurt the fellowship, but hey, it's Narcotics Anonymous, man. You know, we don't attract the cream of the crop here. You know, you know, I mean, you got me, you know. So here I am. I'm at, you know, the First World Service Conference I go to. It's 1983 conference. The first representative from outside of the United States was there. He's from Ireland. This guy Shane, and the conference was just blown away. They were just, yay, you know, we got, you know, the first representative from outside the United States. The only problem, Shane was from New York. This guy Roger Teague, who you guys heard being spoke of, you know, with the basic text, had met Shane in New York and said, "Hey, you're from Ireland, you're going to represent Ireland at the World Service Conference." Well, you can imagine what happened when Ireland found out about that. Who in the hell is Shane, you know? We didn't elect this guy, you know. It's like, so we were constantly doing stuff like that, you know. I mean, it's like, But it was a big deal at the conference. I'll tell you, everybody was just ecstatic, you know. You know, we got the first representative outside of the U.S. Okay, we also did something, and Kermit spoke a little bit about it. It was my first conference. You know, like I said, I had not been involved with the rest of the fellowship up until that point in time. You know, we were pretty isolated in Hawaii, so so here I am, an RSR. I was blown away. I had no idea we had grown as much as we had. You know, and I was just absolutely, I had a spiritual awakening, I'm telling you. You know, I absolutely had a spiritual awakening there. Changed my whole outlook, okay. But we knew Germany was coming next year, and Australia, and somewhere else in the UK. So now we're realizing, you know, what's coming down the pipe. The fellowship is, you know, we knew there was meetings all over the place. You know, your dad had been getting letters for years. You know, but now they were coming to be a part of the World Service Conference. So they created a committee. It's called the International Affairs Committee. And they picked me to be on it since I was from Hawaii. You know, I think Joe Proctor and Kermit, I forget who else was on it, but it was a handful of people. They gave me Asia. They split up the whole world. They divvied up the world to each person. Okay, you got this, you got that, you got this. Tom, you're in Hawaii, you get Asia. You know, I was thrilled, man. You know, I was just so proud. You know, I had Asia. I had no budget, no staff. You know, they're going to ship me back to Hawaii, you know, and I have Asia, you know, and it's like, so, you know, grandiose as we are, right? So, but here's the thing that happened. I go back to Hawaii, and early on, there was a guy that came to Hawaii, a Japanese member named Kiyoshi, and he wanted to know how to start NA in Hawaii. So me and a couple of guys got together with them. We brought them, of course, the NA meetings. We gave him all our literature. He spoke only Japanese. And we really didn't know what was happening with the Japanese after he left. And then one day at an NA meeting in Hawaii, this guy comes in the meeting. He's sitting there, and he says he's from Japan. And he's a priest. And he's an addict. So I was all excited to find out about what was going on in Japan. Well, the guy didn't have much time to talk to me because he said, I'm going to catch a flight to Philadelphia. I said, well, you know, we have one of the quarterlies going on in Philadelphia next weekend. So we end up bringing this guy, you know, to the quarterly. And it sort of made that first connection. Now, you got to understand that Japan was really the first culture outside of what we're used to. You know, it had a completely different language, different culture, you know, didn't have that Judeo-Christian background, you know, so we were intrigued with what they were doing. And the Japanese, you know, they would come to Hawaii to our little gatherings and stuff, and they kept saying to me, Tom, please come to Hawaii, you know, come visit us. And I'd say, well, I'd love to. And they said, good, we will wait. You know, I go. So the following year, I went to the World Service Conference, thinking that would be my last year, and they elected me onto the Board of Trustees, which I thought was an absolute joke. You know, I mean, you know, I don't want to take up much time talking about this stuff, but I thought it was a joke. I mean, I had served on no committees in my life other than in Hawaii, and, you know, why would they put me in that position? But I figured they didn't want Larry North on the board, and they didn't want Greg Pierce on the board. So, you know, they said, we'll get the guy from Hawaii, you know. He's got the clean time qualifications, you know. So, you know, and you had that sense, you know, maybe you were being manipulated, you know, you were being used. You know, it was just there. And it was happening, too, believe me. You know, but I fooled them, you know. One day I went to the board meeting, you know, and we were getting so busy, and we had no money. You know, created this International Affairs Committee, we just passed the budget, the biggest budget ever in Narcotics Anonymous, was $86,000. And everybody just thought, shit, you know, like, where are we going to come up with $86,000, you know? But so as everything is starting to happen, you know, with World Services and NA, you know, I kept bringing up this thing. Well, what about, you know, Japan? Yeah, maybe, you know, because we had sent somebody to Australia and we had sent somebody, I think, to Canada and a couple places. And but they said, Tom, we ain't got no money, man. So I said, what if I just go on my own? I'll pay my own way. And but they really want somebody there. And I think it would be important. So they said, okay, well, you go. We'll sanction you, you know, as rural services. And they said, but do something when you're there. Find out about the God thing. You know, how are they translating, how are they interpreting the God thing? You know, because, you know, it's a whole different culture there. So I said, okay, I'll see if I can figure it out. So I get there, you know, they had that priest, you know, but I didn't want to hear his God stuff, you know. You know, I wanted to hear it right from the Japanese, but no one spoke English there either. So the second day I was in Japan, the members came to get me at my hotel, and we went around Tokyo, and they brought me back to the hotel that night. And when I walked into the door of the hotel, the people and the staff said, "Mr. McCall, your passport. You lost your passport in the subways." And because I had put my hotel receipt in my passport, someone had found it. And the Japanese, if they were to find something like this, they would consider it an honor to have found it and be able to return it to you. So someone returned it all the way across Tokyo. Tokyo is huge. And to the hotel. And at the same time, there was like 6 or 7 Japanese members with me. And they all went, "Oh, Tom, hiya, power!" You know. And so I just went. So I thought to myself, wow. So, you know, next day we're walking down the street, and, you know, and I see this thing, they call them pachinko parlors, where they, it's sort of like, you know, pinball machines, slot machines, it's a big gambling thing, but there's big, huge parlors, and they're all glittery and stuff. And I kept walking right to them, and I said, "What are these things?" And they said, "Oh, pachinko, you're like, you want to play pachinko?" I go, "Yeah, let's go." So they set me up, and man, I'm winning like crazy. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And they're like, "Oh, Tom, higher power, stronger than you, man." You know, so I got it. They got the same thing as we got. You know, you don't have to put a name to it. We just know something's working in our lives, something magical, and it's powerful in us. You know, and you know, so I have, you know, I've been to Japan 30 times. You know, I love the fellowship over there. You know, I still don't understand any Japanese. You know, they talk about the language of the heart, you know, that we have here. I'll tell you, no matter where I go, it's there. You know, talk about the weather, we don't know what the hell we're talking about. We talk about recovery, we communicate. But we left Japan alone, though. I mean, Japan then started coming to the World Service Conference. We tried to work with them with translations. I think they were a beta test on how not to do translations. Because, you know, the Japanese, here's what they do. You get something translated for them, you know, and you hand it to them. They go, "Ah, oh, arigato, thank you. So, is it good? Oh, so, very good." Well, they fucking hated it. It sucked, you know. It's like, but they would never tell you. They would never tell you this sucked. So you think, "Oh, wow, you know, we just did a great job, you know." And then you find out years later, no one's reading it. No one wants to read it. You know, so it took years, you know, to learn to talk to, you know, to communicate with these guys. Say, look at, so it took them 20 years to get the basic text translated. 20 years, and they went through drafts and drafts and drafts. But they finally got a basic text they love. So, and, you know, and there's things in our language that just doesn't translate, man. It just doesn't translate. So, you know, when we're hammering away on these little details of changing this and changing that, we don't have any idea that, you know, the domino effect that this is going to have on another community, you know. So, you know, but we left them alone quite a bit. There was a treatment program that got started by some drug addicts there called DARC. D-A-R-C stands for Drug Addict Rehabilitation Center. And DARC became huge in Japan. And wherever DARC started, NA would start. And it's one of the reasons NA grew. And pretty much most of the third world countries, treatment centers would start, and then they would start NA, and then NA would grow. And but there was a lot of, you know, enmeshment with the treatment centers too. And you know, there's a lot of, you know, people who just didn't know the difference between NA and the treatment center because they were one and the same, it felt like. And so, you know, it's taken a lot of effort, a lot of, you know, especially from rural services to work with communities, do workshops on the service structure, the traditions and stuff. Because a lot of them just don't have that. They don't have members there that are going to help them get through this stuff. You know, so I remember I was in Japan once. I went to this the city called Kobe. It was an NA convention, they said. It was sort of a camp-out convention in this kind of church grounds, and I had to sleep on these floors with these rice pillows. And they asked me to speak one night, you know, be the speaker at their big Saturday night meeting, which was a room, a huge room with a table that went all the way around like this. And then, and I sat there, and so I shared. They had a translator share for me. And so when I was finished, there was lots of time left, and I said, well, let's just go around the room, you know, people can just share. Well, my translator had to leave for a little while. So I'm sitting there, and this guy's talking, you know, talking. I don't understand them. Finally, this one guy gets up and goes, and he starts pounding on the table, and, you know, and I'm seeing all the Japanese guys going, you know. And I'm going, okay. And then another one gets up, saying, and he starts banging on the table, and I go, and so I said, this one Japanese member sitting next to me, I said, he spoke a little bit of English, I said, hey, these guys right now, the NA members? He goes, no NA member, a church member. I said, church member? I said, are we still having the NA meeting? He goes, no more NA meeting, church meeting now. I was like, what the hell? Is this morphed into a church meeting? I said, you guys like this? He goes, oh no, we don't like church meeting, you know. But they would, you know, they wouldn't disrespect these people, you know. So I mean, you can see, you know, they need a lot of assistance, man. You know, they need a lot of help, man. You know, it's like So anyways, I'm going to keep moving. You know, what do I got going on here, Tim? Time? We're good. Okay, because I got to move around the world here. Okay, so So we had lots of questions, you know, about as NA would start spreading around the world. You know, how it's going to affect, you know, these different cultures. Some had caste systems, you know, and traditions that how would our traditions, our philosophy fit into these things? It was, you know, we knew it was going to be really challenging, you know, and it had to be learn as you go kind of thing. It's just, there wasn't a book on this one. The one thing that NA did that AA didn't do is see, when AA started growing internationally, They just had their fellowships as well. You know what? If you're going to start in Australia, start your own rural service conference in Australia. Get your own board of trustees in Australia. Germany, do your own thing there. Do your own thing in all these countries. In the U.S., Canada did their own thing. And so, and they have some big troubles now in a lot of these countries. I mean, they do. They have some huge challenges. But we call ourselves a rural service conference. AA thought we were nuts. You guys have got to be crazy. You're going to bring people in from all over the world into your rural service conference. We said, yeah, I guess we are kind of nuts, you know. But you know what? We are a rural service. We are a rural life fellowship. We are one. And we're going to do it. Okay? You know what? It is insane. But you know what? 130 countries now. Go to the rural service conference. Oh, man, you got to be kidding me. 15 minutes. Okay. Okay, guys, I'm flying, man. anyways, one of the great things that happened, okay, in one of the conferences, you know, because, you know, all the fighting that you guys heard about this weekend that would be going on with NA during the 80s and stuff. Well, as all these countries are coming in from everywhere, some of the things that started happening, though, is that all these delegates, RSRs from all these countries would be here. Well, you know, they could give a rat's ass about, you know, the fights that were going on with the basic text. You know, all they were concerned about is what carrying their message in their countries, you know, in their governments and trying to get through all this stuff. You know, but one conference, the conference was bombarded by 130 something motions by one guy. And literally tried to take the conference hostage. Well, something happened they didn't expect. All these members from outside the U.S. all got up and walked out. They said, "Man, we're done with this. You know, we paid our own way here. We don't have very much money. What a waste of time for us. And you guys are just fighting amongst yourselves. You know, the crab bucket." Well, out of that, you know, they already had the EDM in Europe, you know, the European delegates meeting. But the APF got started out of that. And then Latin America Zonal Forum got started. And then some of the U.S. forums actually got started out of that. And, you know, that little grassroots movement that happened there has helped spread the NA message in more ways than you can ever believe. You know, what a partnership that's been created. And they're not even officially a part of the service system. You know, it's sort of like these two little home groups here, you know. I mean, look at this. Fabulous, you know. But grassroots is really so important here, man, you know, that we have these grassroots things that happen. We don't need to be afraid of them, you know, because if they're good men, they'll flourish. You know, you got things like Vietnam. You know, they have expats there, but they can't have regular NA meetings for the Vietnamese. You can't write literature. You know, the government, anything that says God in it, they're on you. You could be arrested. Thailand, you know, a few years ago, they gathered up 2,500 drug addicts in Thailand and shot them in the streets. Okay. Not good PR for, you know, NA hotline. You know, well, if you want help, call Narcotics Anonymous. You know, they ain't coming out in the open, man, you know. You know, the only way you can deal with that is through something like our rural services has to deal with their governments, their medical, psychiatric, professional, you know, to get those doors open so that they know NA is an okay place. And they'll allow addicts to safely go there or go through some rehab to get there. It's the only way it's going to happen. Same thing in China and Vietnam. You know, this is why that kind of, you know, global, that kind of PR we do with the SAMHSA and all these organizations, you know, the fact that we're, you know, that we're, you know, that we have a relationship with the United Nations and all that. You know, much as some of us will freak out about, well, how does that work with the traditions, you know, and all that. You know what? We're living in a world, man, where you got to do that shit. If we want to get the message to the adequate stuffers, they're dying out there. Think of China, man. Millions, millions, millions. And you know what? And they're not growing. They're not really growing. You know, they got a basic text now, but you know what? They can't reach the addict, you know, the general Chinese fellowship, membership. I mean, addicts out there, because the government says, we got our own program. They're labor camps. They're prisons. You know? If you guys want to copy this stuff, I can give it to you too. Obviously, I'm not going to have enough time to go through it, but in 2000, I went to Indonesia to Jakarta. They had a convention. There's 400 members, mostly young. I mean, I'm talking about young, like probably under 28 years old and under. Enthusiastic, love, you know, about their recovery, everything. 50% of them have HIV, the rest Hep C. Government won't treat them. You know, they had constant memorial services all the time for their members dying. We left there, you know, in their convention, full of parents, children, you know, and brothers and sisters. That's in all these countries and down in Latin America. That's what it's like. You know, the families come to the meetings, the conventions. They celebrate. You know, it's and when we left Indonesia, I remember going back to the board, you know, and saying, man, you know, we got to go back to there with some worldwide workshop or something, you know. But we had so much else going on with, you know, with Iran and Russia, you know, Eastern Europe, you know, once the Iron Curtain came down, I mean, meetings breaking out all over Eastern Europe. And, so we didn't get back there. Right now, the fellowship is just about dead. There's a couple of meetings, a few members. A bunch of members are still clean, but fellowships just kind of fell apart. They needed the kind of support. They needed the kind of, you know, you know, workshops and stuff to help them to build up a solid workshop. I mean, you know, service structure there. So that breaks my heart, of course. Pakistan, places like Pakistan, countries we can't go to. Even if we wanted to, we can't go. But what we started doing now is getting members from different countries who we've now been able to identify as somebody who's got some real strong recovery, real solid, you know, NA service thing, and we're sending them directly into those countries. You know, like, for instance, Pakistan's been there for 18 years. We didn't know what the hell's going on there. You know, is it NA as we know it? You know? You know, Latin America, you know, I mean, that fellowship is just unbelievable. They're so passionate. They're so... I would hate to be a newcomer, you know, because you walk in the door and you say... And they just grab you and hug you to death and go, "Don't use, please, we love you." And they'll cry, you know, and it's like, and they get on their knees and they beg you not to use, you know. And I'd be like, you know, it's like... So, but, and of course, you know, Brazil, second largest region in the world. Now they have 5 regions within Brazil. They're growing like crazy. You know, I wish I could go through all the European countries with you. But I will, I know a lot of you want to hear about Iran. I spent a month in Iran. You know, we did workshops all around the country. You know, when we heard about what was going on in Iran, we didn't know if it was true. You know, so we sent 2 board members, one from...
Simon.
Yeah, well, Simon's been there, yeah. But this is long, he came in years later. Okay. But we sent 2 board members there, this guy Pete and this guy Daniel, Pete from Sweden, Daniel from Germany, because we were afraid to send some Americans in there from the office. So they had to like tell us, okay, we know the, you know, because we had gotten this letter from them saying that the president of Iran, not the one they have right now, the other one, wanted to give award NA with the best NGO of the year, that's non-governmental organization, and whether could we accept that? Is that within the traditions? And we said, well, certainly, if you accept it on behalf of Narcotics Anonymous. And they said, okay, because we're having a convention and there's going to be about 14,000 members there. And we said, no way, 14,000. I mean, other addicts, they're exaggerating. So after it was over, they sent us photos of a sports arena filled. And we went, whoa. So then we sent Pete and Daniel to find out, is it NA as we know it? Well, they came back and they said, well, you know what? Not only is it NA as we know it, it's NA better than we know it. Okay. I called up Siamak. He's our office manager, WSO office manager in Iran, so I'll get you an up-to-date thing. So I said, give me the history. Tell me where you guys are at. It's a one-page thing. He said, exactly 20 years ago, last month, a member called Masan T, who had 1 year clean and had become clean in USA, tried to carry the message into government-owned rehab center. After a few times, he tried to start a meeting in that rehab center, but the officials told him he should act under the name of the rehab center, and he should accept NA to be affiliated with the center. So as he says himself, he decided to stop carrying the message. Then 4 years later, him and 3 other members who had just came back from the U.S. and were all clean meet each other in a party in Tehran by chance. The name of the 3 members was Fuhar, Ali, and Amir Hosun. So in that party, they decide to meet again and start a NA meeting in Tehran. After a few weeks, the first meeting starts, and it takes a few months for newcomers to come in and stay who are still clean. In the next 3 to 4 years, we had 1 or 2 meetings with about 45 members, but NA started to grow right after the second generation accumulated about 1 year clean time. I became the LTC Literature Translation Committee Chair and started translating the literature and was in constant contact with Nas, asking him about everything we did not know. Some of the members started going to different cities in Iran carrying the message, and some started PI in order to convince the government to cooperate with NA. And that is when NA started to grow, and in a couple of years, we formed a region. Now check this out. Today, we have 3,684 groups Oh, wait. That's 17,223 meetings. They estimate they have anywhere from 300 to 350,000 members. let me read a little excerpt. Some of you guys might have read it in the NAOA magazine a while back, and I included it in this little update thing I was sending around while I was there. This member, hi, my name is Habib. I am an addict. Greetings to all addicts at the Central Prison in Kwazan and all NA members around the world. I am writing this letter as I pass the final moments of my life. I am very close to death. I wish to send a message to all fellow members. I got clean through Narcotics Anonymous meetings in jail. And through attending these meetings, I stopped using drugs in jail. I have become very close to God. I feel good and I'm at peace with the world and myself. I've accepted the will of God. I'd like to ask you fellows to stay clean and be of service. Try to help other addicts stay clean physically, mentally, and spiritually. Please continue this path to save other addicts. I have nothing else to say. My name is Habib. In the dawn of my life, and by dawn, my life will end. I will be hanged for the crimes I committed. But I have been clean for 84 days. Besides you, I wish success for all addicts, members and non-members. God bless. And he died. He was executed. A lot of us see our world convention, as being a celebration of recovery. I don't. It is a celebration of recovery, but I don't see it as that. I see it as one giant 12-step call. Barcelona had 60 countries that were there. You can't believe with some of these members that come, NAS pulls people in to speak, people that would never in a million years ever get out of their countries. They go back and the message they carry. But it is. It's like a huge 12-step call. And a lot of us think of service and this, and we forget what service really is. All it is a 12-step call. We're just doing 12-step work. But we got labels for it, there's just so many, I got a lot of little excerpts from different NA people, NA members that shared things in here. It's amazing. It's amazing that our fellowship has gone where it's gone because I remember going to a conference in Hong Kong once. It was for non-governmental organizations, and I was representing NA Rural Services, and representing you guys, or us, and I'm sitting there in all these countries are giving their country reports. These are all ministers of health and all these people. And I remember, I think it was Thailand or Malaysia or Indonesia, one of these, countries stood up and they say, and we are dealing with the drug addiction problem. For 8 grams or more, possession 8 grams or more, it's death by hanging. And the whole conference got up and gave them a standing ovation. And I was the only one sitting down. And I'm thinking, fuck. And that's all they know. That was in the 80s, and I remember thinking, hearing all these country reports, thinking, man, there's no way we're going to get our message into these countries. There's just so many obstacles, But we did it. We have done it. Nepal, a few people shared about Nepal. They have such a special little fellowship. A guy named Bijay, he came to the APF, sitting around a whole group of people talking about their area service committees and their regions, and he was just feeling so insecure. And he said, I just feel so insecure here. I came from Nepal, from Kathmandu. He says, we have 2 meetings. That's all we have. I remember looking at him, I said, BJ, if I were to go anywhere in the fellowship and say, there's 2 meetings in Kathmandu on top of the world, it'll blow everybody away. And he goes, really? Well, that fellowship has exploded all over Nepal. And these guys driving motorbikes, you know, I mean, their roads are just atrocious, you know. These guys get around, man. But, you know, one of the most beautiful things I've seen is, you know, is with money. You know, they pass the basket around like this. They pull a coin out of their basket, out of their pockets. And they don't have money there, man. They don't have much money at all. They point a coin out of their pocket. They put it to their forehead. They put it to their lips, and they put it to their heart. And then they put it back to their forehead, their lips, and their heart, and they put it in the basket as an offering to the addict who's still suffering. They take it very, very serious. You know? And these guys, you know, I think the second time I was there, you know, we met together with all their areas and got together, and we're, you know, and we're saying, you know, and some of them started saying about their struggles with getting literature in their to their country. I said, well, so you can just write to us at NAS, you know, at Rural Services. We'll send you the literature, and key tags, and all that stuff for free. And we know you guys don't have the funds. The fellowship wants this, you know. And they said, this one guy pulled out this little white book, and it was just worn to, I mean, just worn so much. And that's the only thing they had was a little white book they read at their meetings. And the key tags, you wouldn't believe this, man. They give you a white key tag, you know, for the first 30 days, a welcome trip, right? If you relapse, they go after your ass to get it back. Yeah. You know, one-year medallion, you pass it on. You don't get to keep it, you pass it on. In Kolkata, they have an area service committee meeting under the window of Mother Teresa's house. That's some high energy, man, I'm telling you. You know, and those guys, you know, I remember saying once, you know, this is a very poor country, you know, very poor city and stuff. You know, because, you know, if you leave the airport in Kolkata, there's a sign that says, "Welcome to Kolkata, the city of joy." And then you see the poverty and, you know, and all this stuff, and you go, how can they say it's a city of joy? And then you see the people. And you see how they're living in the streets with their little blankets and all their stuff, and they're playing with each other. And, you know, and I remember saying that, you know, this is, you know these friends, you know, these Indian friends of mine, and that this is a very poor country. And they said, well, Tom, we're not poor. He said, according to your standards in the West, we're poor. But we're rich. We're wealthy. You know, with culture and spirituality and generosity and love. No, we have a lot here. He says, this isn't homelessness. This is home. For generations, we've lived this way. And, you know, and then a lot of learning out there in the world, you know, about how the world operates and how they see life, you know. And Iran, they do something in Iran. They invited me to a 12-step party. Okay, 12-step party. I was like, what the hell is that? 13 sponsors were lined up on the floor. 13 sponsees were lined up on the floor. And each of the sponsees got up and read off their 12-step. This is the first time they've completed all 12 steps, and they're reading it now off the 12th step to their sponsor. The sponsor has a bouquet of flowers. He gets up and hugs them. Everybody claps right down the line, all 13. I thought it was weirder than hell at first, you know. But then I got to thinking, you know, boy, what greater thing to celebrate than the completion of the 12 steps? I know people have been clean for 25 years and never worked the steps. And yet they'll celebrate 25 years like, you know, like it's the greatest thing on earth. You know, to me, that's what's more important, that we get this program so we can really carry a message of recovery, you know. Tons of stuff like that. We in the United States have a lot to learn from all these other communities around the world that, you know, that, and they just love the United States. I mean, to us, you know, we're it. You know, well, not all of them. But most of them do, you know. But you know, it's expensive to do this. It costs millions and millions and millions of dollars. You know, the basic tax pretty much did the whole thing. Funded the whole deal. Without it, none of this would have happened. Contributions from the fellowship, you know, as far as the fund flow goes, it doesn't work, hasn't worked. Groups are self-supporting, absolutely. You know, we have a tradition, we self-support through, but the fund flow doesn't work. And there's something happening right now with World Services. I don't know if you guys have heard about it yet, but you probably will soon. But come next spring, we're broke. We're broke. You know, we put aside, maybe 3 months operating expenses, which was about $4 million. We're just about through it. This economic hit, you know, this global hit, you know, is finally catching us. Squeezed everything you could squeeze. Now layoffs are next. Cutting out certain services, translations. You wouldn't believe the translations that goes on at Rural Services. I mean, I'm talking about, I have lists of all the different things that are being translated and all the different languages. You know, and speaking of translations, you know, Africa, you know, the fellowship is growing in Africa too. You know, it's like, I guess I've run out of time here, but they oh, wait a second, Gene, you guys just went on. Huh? Okay, so no, you know, I mean, it's not fair for us, the so-called old timers, you know, to do this to you guys, but in Africa, you know, same thing, you know, it's like, you know, you know the translations are very difficult, you know, and even if we had translations for a lot of these places, you know. The literacy rate is so high that they couldn't read it if we had it, you know. But now we live in a world of technology, you know. You have these little things called MP3 sticks. You can put an IP on there, all kinds of things. Get somebody in some village somewhere, you know. A lot of us think, you know, in terms of you know the disease of addiction and all these countries that are in these big cities. No, man, it's everywhere. They're in the little villages, too. They're everywhere. It's everywhere. Okay? But these little MP sticks, you can put the message on these MP, and if you produce them at 50 cents a piece, that's all it would cost. You know, it's, I would love to see us go there someday. You know, it's, because then an addict who can't read gets the message. Right, all you have to do is just press a little button and put it to his ear, and there it is. He doesn't have to have a computer. You know how they work. You know, this. Here's Bangladesh. Let's give you a little excerpt from Bangladesh. This guy just came back from the APF in Kolkata. It says, "Dear all, hope you are fine. It's not very long since we met in the APF. A significant growth has taken place in Bangladesh after that. We did a very successful camp out with 120 participants. In that camp out, many fellows were interested about NA, and subsequently we got 4 new NA groups started in Dhaka. Now we have a total of 9 NA groups with 11 meetings a week, which covers all days of the week. Another significant momentum for Bangladesh region is that we have arranged for our first PR information booth in the Dharamani on 14th April at a big festive for Bangladesh, which is actually the first day of Bengali New Year. We got a lot of a crowd in the PR stall and expecting to get a great result from upcoming days. We are trying our best to share what we have learned in APF 2010 in service, Raza Chair, Dhaka Committee Service." You know, Bangladesh is another one. You know, treatment centers there, choking out NA. Now NA's finally got out on their own. You know, there's when the fellowship started breaking out in Eastern Europe, you know, and all over Russia, Russia, you know, you've seen the map. It's a huge, huge country, you know. We did a workshop in the Ukraine where we brought in 150 members from Western Russia, Siberia, you know, from Croatia, these are countries I can't even pronounce their names, you know. I mean, practically, but we brought all these people together, united that whole country, you know. Because none of them ever met each other, you know. They can't travel. Some of these guys, when they travel to these things, it's 3 days by train. I mean, and train loads of them, and they come in from buses, you know, I mean, these guys will do the work. You know, they're amazing. They're absolutely amazing. The passion they have for recovery and for Narcotics Anonymous. So, your dad's dream? Yeah. Okay, guys.